That meant whoever got to the top first. Leaping to his feet, Pendergast scrambled spider-like up the side of the tour. He arrived at the summit at the very moment as Esterhazy did, and they came together in a violent embrace, grappling on the high point of the hill before toppling off, rolling down the rocky face in a desperate clinch. Shoving Esterhazy back, Pendergast swung his .32 around, but Esterhazy slashed at it with the barrel of his rifle, the two weapons clashing like swords, both going off simultaneously. Pendergast seized the barrel of Esterhazy's rifle with one hand, and they struggled over it, Pendergast dropping his pistol in an attempt to wrest away Esterhazy's weapon with both hands. The mano a mano continued, all four hands on the same rifle, twisting and thrashing, each trying to shake the other off. Pendergast bent forward and sank his teeth into Esterhazy's hand, ripping into the flesh. With a roar, Esterhazy head-butted him, knocking the FBI agent back, and kicked him fiercely in his side. The clash brought both of them down onto the frost-split rocks again, their camouflage ripping and tearing. Getting his hand on the trigger, yanking and twisting, Pendergast fired it again and again to empty the magazine. He let go and drove his fist into Esterhazy's skull, just as the man swung the rifle around club-like, slamming Pendergast in the chest. Seizing the stock, Pendergast tried to wrench it free again, but in a surprise move, Esterhazy jerked the agent forward while delivering a savage kick to his face, almost breaking his nose in the process. Blood spurted everywhere, and Pendergast fell back, shaking his head, trying to clear it as Esterhazy fell on top of him, slamming his face again with the rifle stock. Through the fog and blood, he could see Esterhazy scrabbling fresh rounds out of his bag, shoving them into the rifle. He kicked up the muzzle and threw himself sideways as a shot rang out, seized his own handgun from where he had dropped it, rolled and returned fire. But Esterhazy had already scrambled for cover behind the tour. Taking advantage of the temporary lull, Pendergast leapt up and raced down the hill, turning to fire several times, keeping Esterhazy pinned down while he sprinted away. Reaching the bottom of the hill, he darted into the mire, heading for a hollow where he was quickly enveloped in a swirl of dense fog. There he paused, surrounded by quaking mud. The ground under his feet shook strangely like gelatin. He probed ahead with the toe of his boot, locating firmer ground, and headed deeper into the foul mire, stepping from hillock to hillock, stone to stone, trying to keep clear of the sucking pools of quicksand while putting as much distance as possible between himself and Esterhazy. As he moved, he heard a series of shots from the direction of the tour, but they went wild. Esterhazy was firing at shadows. Making a 30-degree turn, Pendergast slackened his pace. There was little cover on the mire, beyond the odd tumulus of broken rock. The fog would be his only protection. That meant keeping low. He continued on, moving as swiftly as prudence would allow, often pausing to probe with his foot. He knew Esterhazy would be following. The man had no choice. And he was a superb tracker, perhaps even superior to Pendergast himself. As he walked, he slipped a kerchief out of his bag and pressed it to his nose, trying to stem the flow of blood. He could feel the grating of a broken rib in his chest, a result of the fierce struggle. He silently reproached himself for not checking his rifle immediately before their departure. The rifles had been locked in the lodge's gun room, as the rules required. Esterhazy must have used some ploy to get at his weapon. It only took a minute or two to remove a firing pin. He had underestimated his adversary. He would not do so again. Suddenly he paused, examining the ground. There, in a gravelly patch, was the track of the stag they had spooked. He listened intently, peering behind from whence he had come. The mists were rising from the mire in tattered columns, momentarily obscuring and disclosing views of the endless moors and distant mountains. The tor on which they had fought was wreathed in mist, and his pursuer was nowhere to be seen. A deep grey light lay over all, with a darkness looming to the north, occasionally shot through with flickers of lightning, an approaching storm. Reloading his Colt, Pendergast headed still deeper into the mire, following the faint track of the stag as it picked its way along an invisible path known only to itself, threading ingeniously between quaking bogs and sucking pools. It wasn't over. Esterhazy was in hot pursuit. There could be only one outcome. One of them would not return. Chapter 3. Pendergast followed the faint track of the stag as it meandered through the shivering fens of the mire, keeping to firm ground. As the storm moved in, the sky grew darker and distant thunder rolled over the moors. He moved swiftly, pausing only long enough to examine the ground for signs of the stag's passage. The mire was especially treacherous this time of year, when the long summer had allowed green grass to overspread many of the pools of quaking bog, leaving a deceptive crust that would break under the weight of a man. Lightning flashed and rain started down, heavy drops whirling out of the leaden sky. The wind rose, rustling over the heather, carrying up a miasmic smell from the Innish marshes to the west. A vast, sheeted surface of water covered with patches of reeds and cattails swaying in the wind. For more than a mile he followed the stag's trail. It gradually led to higher and firmer ground, and then, through a sudden gap in the mists, Pendergast spied a ruin ahead. Silhouetted against the sky at the top of a rise stood an old stone corral and shepherd's hut, fitfully illuminated by the flickering lightning. Beyond the hill lay the ragged edges of the marshes. Examining the broken firs, Pendergast noted that the stag had passed through the ruins and continued toward the vast swamp on the far side. He mounted the hill and quickly explored the ruin. The hut was unroofed, the stone walls broken and covered with lichen, the wind moaning and whistling through the tumbled remains. Beyond, the hill fell away to a swamp that lay hidden in a murk of rising vapors. The ruin, commanding the high ground, offered an ideal defensible position, with unobstructed views in all directions. A perfect place from which to ambush a pursuer or stand against an attack. For those reasons, Pendergast passed it by and continued down the hill toward the Innish marshes. Again, he picked up the track of the stag and was momentarily puzzled. The stag seemed to be heading into a dead end. The animal must have felt harried by Pendergast's pursuit.